A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the orange hue. Donald Trump's complexion has been a visual signature for about a decade now, and the internet has generated roughly as many theories about it as there are photographs. I mean, we're talking thousands of hours of amateur sleuthing, entire subreddits devoted to color grading his press conference stills, people who have literally written Python scripts to sample the RGB values from his forehead across different lighting conditions. The question is straightforward. What's actually going on? And which of the competing explanations hold water? Herman, you're our resident medical mind. What does the evidence point to?
Let's start with what we can rule out, because that narrows the field considerably. The carotid hypothesis, the idea that he's eating too many carrots or sweet potatoes, that one surfaces constantly. People point to keratinemia, which is a real condition where beta-carotene deposits in the skin produce a yellow-orange discoloration. But here's the thing, keratinemia presents most prominently on the palms, soles, and nasolabial folds. It spares the sclera, which distinguishes it from jaundice. And critically, it doesn't produce the kind of wide-eye goggle effect we see in Trump's photographs.
Pause, raccoon.
That stark periorbital contrast where the skin around the eyes remains lighter. Carotinemia is diffuse. It doesn't leave those sharp demarcations. Think of it like steeping a teabag in hot water. The color disperses evenly throughout the medium. You don't get a pale ring around the edge of the cup. So unless Trump is applying sunblock exclusively around his eye sockets with surgical precision, we're not looking at a dietary phenomenon.
The man is not, in fact, comprised of 60% sweet potato by volume.
He is not. Though that would be a remarkable medical case study. No, the periorbital sparing is the single most diagnostically useful clue here. It tells us we're dealing with an applied substance, not a systemic one. Something that's being put on the face but deliberately or accidentally kept away from the immediate eye area.
Which narrows things to cosmetics. Bronzer, self-tanner, spray tan, foundation, something in that family.
And this is where the theories get interesting because they diverge on what exactly is being applied, how deliberately, and whether the effect is even unintentional in certain contexts. Let me walk through the major contenders. First, the straightforward explanation, he uses a specific brand of drugstore bronzer or foundation that photographs poorly under certain lighting conditions. There was a period where makeup artists were speculating that it looked like a particular shade from, I think it was a Swiss brand.
I've seen the name bandied about. The thing about that theory is it presupposes he's doing his own makeup, or has a makeup artist who's spectacularly bad at their job. And I have trouble with that. Because if you're a person with virtually unlimited resources, why wouldn't you hire the best makeup artist in New York and have them on retainer?
That's a fair question. But let me push back a little. Having resources doesn't necessarily mean you deploy them effectively in every domain. There are plenty of wealthy people who cut their own hair badly or wear ill-fitting clothes. Money doesn't automatically confer aesthetic judgment. And there's also the possibility that he doesn't trust outsiders with his appearance, that it's a control thing. If you're someone who's famously particular about your image, handing that over to a professional might feel like ceding too much control.
That's actually a really interesting point. The same psychology that makes someone micromanage their organization might make them micromanage their own face.
Which brings us to theory two, and this is the one that actually has the most circumstantial support, spray tanning, specifically a DIY spray tan or a poorly calibrated professional one. Spray tans use dihydroxyacetone, or DHA, which reacts with amino acids in the dead layer of the skin to produce a brownish pigment called melanoidin. The key variable is DHA concentration. Too high, and you get an unnatural orange rather than a golden brown. It's the same chemistry that makes a sliced apple turn brown when exposed to air, just accelerated and directed at human skin.
Wait, the same reaction? The apple browning?
It's a related Maillard-type reaction, yes. DHA binds to the amino acids in the stratum corneum and creates melanoidins through a series of condensation reactions. The concentration of DHA, the pH of the solution, and the individual skin chemistry all affect the final color. Some people's skin produces more reddish tones, some more yellowish, some more brown. If you happen to have skin chemistry that skews toward the yellow-orange end of the spectrum, and you're using a high-concentration DHA product, you're going to look orange. There's no way around it.
The eye area thing.
Or cotton pads. Anything you use to shield the delicate periorbital skin during application. If you're getting a spray tan and you wear those little adhesive eye shields, you get precisely the pattern we see, a uniformly tanned face with stark white circles around the eyes. Then, if someone applies a concealer or powder to try to blend it, but doesn't quite match the undertone, you get that slightly uncanny, mask-like quality.
The process would be spray tan with eye protection, then attempt to manually blend the eye area afterward with a separate product, and the two don't match.
That's the most parsimonious reconstruction. And it would explain why the effect is inconsistent. Some days the blending is better than others. Some days the DHA concentration in the batch is slightly different. Some days the lighting is more forgiving. It's not a single variable. It's a system of variables that interact.
There's a third theory I've seen that's more conspiratorial in flavor, that it's intentional, a branding choice.
The idea being that the orange hue makes him instantly recognizable, distinguishes him from every other man in a navy suit, and creates what marketers would call distinctive brand assets. You know how Tiffany has that specific blue, how UPS has Pullman Brown, how Christian Louboutin has red soles. The theory is that Trump has orange skin as his signature color.
The visual equivalent of a signature riff. You see the silhouette, you see the color. You don't need to read the name. And in a media environment where attention is the scarcest resource, being visually unmissable is a genuine competitive advantage. Think about a debate stage with 10 candidates. None of them are various shades of beige to tan. One of them is orange. Where does your eye go?
There's something to that, honestly. Whether it started as an accident and was leaned into or was calculated from the beginning, the effect is the same. It's a visual trademark. But I think the evidence for pure intentionality is weak. If you were going to deliberately cultivate a signature skin tone, you'd probably pick something more. The orange reads as a mistake to most people. That's not the kind of branding professionals usually design. Tiffany didn't pick a blue that looks like a printing error.
Unless the mistake is the brand. The guy who's so outside the system that even his skin color defies elite aesthetic norms. The orange isn't a bug. It's a feature that signals, I'm not playing by your rules.
That's a reading, certainly. But I think Occam's razor points to a simpler explanation. He uses a self-tanning product, possibly for years, possibly inconsistently, and the cumulative effect under television lighting and flash photography produces what we see. There's actually a chemical dimension here that most coverage misses. DHA-derived tans don't provide sun protection, so if you're getting a spray tan and then spending time outdoors, you're still getting UV exposure on top of the artificial pigment. That can create a layered, uneven tone that shifts over time.
Wait, so you're saying the orange might be a palimpsest of artificial tan and actual sun exposure?
That's exactly the word. And it would explain why the hue seems to vary from appearance to appearance. Sometimes more orange, sometimes more bronze, sometimes almost a terracotta. It's not one thing. It's a dynamic system of applied DHA, natural melanin response, whatever topical products are being used that day, and the color temperature of the lighting. If you think of it as a single static color, you're misunderstanding the phenomenon. It's more like a weather system than a paint job.
There's a whole sub-theory about the lighting. That it's not his skin at all. It's the interplay of television studio lights with whatever normal makeup he's wearing.
I've looked into this, and I don't buy it as a complete explanation. Yes, television lighting can do strange things to makeup. Foundation that looks natural in daylight can read as orange under tungsten. But if it were purely a lighting artifact, you'd see the same effect on other people photographed under the same conditions. You don't. The orange is specific to him, so lighting might exacerbate it, but it's not the root cause. It's the difference between a fever and a thermometer. The thermometer might be miscalibrated, but that doesn't mean the fever doesn't exist.
What about the theory that it's a specific medical condition? I've seen people float hemochromatosis, liver issues.
I can address those. Hemochromatosis does produce a bronze or grayish skin discoloration. It's sometimes called bronze diabetes, but it's a systemic deposition of iron, and like keratinemia, it's diffuse, no periorbital sparing. Liver disease produces jaundice, which is yellow, not orange, and it shows in the sclera first. Trump's sclera are consistently white in photographs. So unless he's wearing colored contact lenses to mask jaundice while leaving the skin orange, which would be an extraordinarily convoluted regimen, we can rule out hepatic causes.
Can I ask a practical question about the sclera thing? How reliable is that as a diagnostic sign from photographs? Couldn't photo editing or lighting make sclera look whiter than they actually are?
That's a good methodological question. Yes, photo editing could theoretically whiten sclera, and flash photography can sometimes wash them out. But we have thousands of photographs from thousands of different sources. Professional news agencies, amateur cell phone photos, television screenshots, all under different lighting conditions and with different levels of post-processing. If there were genuine scleral icterus, we'd expect to see it in at least some of those images. The consistency of the white sclera across such a diverse image corpus is itself evidence. It's the same principle as verifying a scientific result across multiple independent labs.
We've ruled out diet, ruled out systemic disease. We're left with applied cosmetics, probably a DHA-based self-tanner, possibly layered with a mismatched foundation, exacerbated by lighting. That's the consensus.
That's the consensus. But let me give you the fringe theories, because some of them are genuinely creative. Theory: he uses a tanning bed and applies a tanning accelerator that contains a particular carotenoid derivative that oxidizes orange under UVA. There's a product called, and I'm not making this up, Carrot Sun, that's popular in some tanning circles. It contains carrot oil and tyrosine. The idea is you apply it before getting into a tanning bed and it's supposed to stimulate melanin production. But if your skin doesn't respond with much melanin, you're left with the oxidized carrot oil pigment.
He might literally be marinating himself, like a self-basting turkey situation.
In a manner of speaking. Another fringe theory involves a specific makeup line that was allegedly developed for high-definition television in the early 2000s and had an undertone that read as orange on certain cameras. The claim is that he's been using the same product for 15 years and the formulation has never been updated.
That's almost poignant. A man frozen in the makeup technology of the George W. like, someone who still uses Internet Explorer because it's what came installed on the computer.
There's also a theory that involves the White House itself, specifically the lighting in the residence and the West Wing. Older fluorescent fixtures can have a green spike in their spectral output. If you're applying makeup to compensate for greenish lighting, you might overcorrect toward warm tones. Then when you step outside into daylight or under broadcast LED panels, the warm correction reads as orange.
That's actually the most interesting one to me, because it suggests the orange isn't a property of his skin at all, but a mismatch between two lighting environments. He's optimized for one, exposed to another. It's like someone who does their makeup in a bathroom with warm incandescent bulbs and then walks into an office with cool fluorescent tubes. Suddenly, they look like a completely different person.
It's the color temperature equivalent of mixing up your audio mix for headphones and then playing it through a PA system. It's going to sound wrong. And the thing about the White House is that it's a patchwork of different lighting systems installed over decades. The residence might have one color temperature, the West Wing another, the press briefing room a third. If you're calibrating your appearance in one room and then spending your day moving between all of them, you're never going to look consistent.
He spends his time split between Mar-a-Lago, Trump Tower, and whatever venues he's speaking at. Different lighting everywhere. If you're doing your own makeup and you've calibrated the mirror in your private quarters, you're going to look different everywhere else. It's the makeup equivalent of setting your watch to the wrong time zone and then missing every meeting.
And that's the thing, most public figures at his level have professional makeup artists who account for venue lighting. They'll do a sight check, they'll test under the actual broadcast lights, they'll adjust. If you're doing it yourself, or with a small consistent team that isn't adapting to each environment, you get exactly this kind of variability. The inconsistency is itself evidence that there's not a sophisticated professional operation behind it.
There's one theory we haven't touched, which is that it's not makeup or tanning at all. It's a post-processing artifact from whatever photo editing or filtering his team applies before releasing images.
Oh, that's an interesting one. the idea being that someone on his comms team has a heavy hand with the saturation slider, or is applying a preset that warms skin tones.
Or is trying to make him look more... There's a whole literature on how slightly warmer skin tones are perceived as more attractive and vital. If you've got an older candidate and you want to project energy, you bump the warmth. It's the same reason food photography tends to lean warm. It makes things look more appetizing.
That doesn't explain the live television appearances where there's no post-processing, unless you're suggesting the broadcasts themselves are being color-graded in real time.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying the post-processing theory can only account for still photographs, not video, so it's at best a partial explanation. It might be true for the images on his social media, but it can't explain what we see on CNN.
Let me throw out one more fringe theory because it's too good not to mention. There's a small but vocal contingent online that believes the orange hue is a deliberate, long-running piece of performance art, that Trump is fully aware of it, maintains it intentionally, and uses it as a kind of social experiment.
The Andy Kaufman theory of presidential aesthetics.
The argument is that the sheer volume of discourse it generates, think pieces, late-night monologues, memes, Reddit threads, literal medical analyses like what we're doing right now, is the point. He's occupying mental real estate. Every minute you spend thinking about why he's orange is a minute you're not thinking about something else. It's a cognitive diversion tactic operating at massive scale.
I find that both absurd and completely plausible. Not that he sat down in the 80s and planned a 40-year skin color psyop, but that at some point he noticed the attention it generated and decided to lean in. Why fix a problem that keeps you at the center of every conversation? If people are talking about your skin, they're not talking about something you'd rather they didn't.
There's actually a precedent for this in media theory. It's sometimes called the deliberate flaw strategy. You include one conspicuous imperfection, a slightly off note in a recording, a visible seam in a garment, because it draws the eye and generates discussion. The flaw becomes the hook. It's the reason some musicians leave a cough or a string squeak in a recording rather than editing it out. The imperfection makes it feel more real, more human, more discussable.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability. But for skin pigmentation...
That's a sentence I never expected to hear.
Let's pull back for a second. One thing that strikes me about this whole discourse is how it functions as a kind of Rorschach test. What you think is causing the orange says more about you than about him. If you think it's a cheap spray tan, you're in the he's a tacky vulgarian camp. If you think it's a deliberate branding choice, you're in the he's a calculating genius camp. If you think it's a medical condition, you're in the something is fundamentally wrong camp. If you think it's bad makeup and lighting, you're in the incompetence, not malice camp. The explanation you favor is basically a personality test. It's like one of those inkblots where the psychologist asks what you see, and your answer reveals your internal landscape.
That's insightful. And it explains why the debate never resolves. People aren't arguing about dihydroxyacetone concentrations. They're arguing about what kind of person Donald Trump is, refracted through the lens of his complexion. The orange is a proxy for a much larger argument about character, class, intentionality, and competence.
The skin is a screen onto which we project our priors.
And the ambiguity is productive. It keeps the discourse going precisely because no single explanation can be definitively proven. Even if he came out tomorrow and said, "I use this specific product," half the internet would assume he was lying. The ambiguity is the engine.
The one thing I'll add, and this is where I think the discourse actually gets interesting, is that the orange hue has arguably been one of the most successful visual brands in modern political history. Not aesthetically successful. I'm not making that claim. You can describe him as the orange one, and everyone on Earth knows who you mean. That's brand recognition that most companies would spend billions trying to achieve. Coca-Cola spends something like $4 billion a year on advertising to maintain the kind of instant recognition that this skin tone achieves for free.
It's worth noting that this wasn't always the case. If you look at photographs from the 80s and 90s, his complexion is unremarkable. Whatever changed, changed sometime in the early 2000s.
Which coincides with the rise of reality television and his transition from real estate developer to media personality.
The Apprentice premiered in 2004. That's when he became a television figure rather than a newspaper figure. And television is where the orange became noticeable.
because television lighting is unforgiving, and whatever he was doing to his face was suddenly being broadcast in high definition to millions of people.
There's actually a specific technical transition that's relevant here. The shift from standard definition to HD broadcasting happened right around 2005 to 2010. Standard definition was much more forgiving of makeup. HD reveals every pore, every color mismatch, every unblended edge. A lot of television personalities had to completely overhaul their makeup regimens during that transition. There are famous stories about news anchors who'd been using the same foundation for 20 years, suddenly looking like they'd applied it with a trowel when the HD cameras switched on.
He might have been orange for years before anyone noticed, because the cameras literally couldn't resolve it. The information was there, but the bandwidth wasn't sufficient to transmit it.
That's entirely possible. The orange was always there, but it took better cameras to make it visible to the audience. It's like when you upgrade your glasses prescription and suddenly realize the world has way more detail than you thought.
Which is a fascinating inversion of the usual narrative. Usually we say someone changed. They became orange. But maybe the audience changed. Our eyes got sharper. The orange was a pre-existing condition that technology revealed, like how the invention of the microscope revealed a whole world of microorganisms that had been there all along.
Once people could see it, it became a thing. Then the thing fed itself. More attention, more commentary, more memes, more incentive to either maintain it or at least not change it.
Because changing it would itself become a story. Trump appears less orange at rally. Has he changed his makeup? That's a headline. That's a news cycle. The media would spend a week analyzing before and after photos, interviewing dermatologists, running panels on what the change signifies about his campaign strategy.
At a certain point, the orange becomes path-dependent. You're locked in. Any deviation is news, so you don't deviate. It's the same dynamic as a hairstyle that becomes iconic. Imagine if Anna Wintour suddenly stopped wearing her bob. It would be a cultural event. The style stops being a choice and becomes an obligation.
Like adopting a feral cat. You didn't plan to have a feral cat, but now it lives in your house, and you've named it. And if it disappeared, people would ask questions.
That's the most corn analogy I've ever heard. The orange is the feral cat of American political aesthetics. You feed it once, and now it's never leaving.
To actually answer the prompt, the best supported theory is DHA-based self-tanner, or spray tan, probably self-applied, or applied by a small consistent team, producing the characteristic periorbital sparing we see in photographs. Layered with a foundation or bronzer that may not match the undertone, exacerbated by inconsistent lighting environments. The hue varies over time due to the interaction of artificial tan, natural sun exposure, and whatever topical products are in rotation. Systemic medical causes are ruled out by the distribution pattern. Dietary causes are ruled out for the same reason. Post-processing may play a role in still images, but not in video. And the whole thing has become a self-reinforcing phenomenon, where the orange is now a locked-in feature of the public image.
That's the summary. I'd add one medical footnote. DHA is generally considered safe for topical use, but there's some evidence that it can generate free radicals when exposed to UV light. So if you're applying DHA-based tanners and then spending time in the sun without additional sunscreen, you're potentially increasing oxidative damage to the skin. It's not something that gets discussed much in the context of public figures, but it's a genuine dermatological consideration.
The aesthetic choice might have downstream health consequences. The thing you're doing to look healthier might actually be making your skin less healthy at a cellular level.
Though at this point, we're speculating about a specific individual's regimen, and I want to be clear that I'm not making any claims about his health. I'm talking about DHA chemistry in general. It's a known mechanism. DHA degradation under UV can produce reactive oxygen species. Whether that translates to clinically significant damage depends on dose, frequency, and individual factors we can't possibly know from photographs.
One last thing. You mentioned earlier that the carotene theory was ruled out by the distribution pattern. But there's a variant of the carotene theory I've seen that's more specific. Not that he eats too many carrots, but that he takes a particular supplement.
Canthaxanthin is a carotenoid that was used in tanning pills in the 80s and 90s. It deposits in the subcutaneous fat and produces an orange-brown skin color. The FDA never approved it for tanning purposes. It was only approved as a food colorant in small quantities. At higher doses, it can cause retinopathy, where crystals form in the retina. Literally, golden crystals precipitating out in your eye tissue.
That sounds horrifying. You're telling me people voluntarily took pills that could crystallize their retinas just to look tanner?
People do a lot of medically inadvisable things for cosmetic reasons. The tanning pill craze was real, and it was dangerous. But the Canthaxin thin tan is orange, more orange than beta-carotene. However, again, it's systemic. It deposits everywhere, including the fat around the eyes. So you wouldn't get the periorbital sparing, unless you're also applying something around the eyes to counteract it, which starts to enter truly Baroque cosmetic territory.
A reverse concealer situation where you're lightening the eye area instead of darkening it. So you take a pill that turns you orange. Then you apply a whitening product around your eyes to create the appearance of not having taken the pill.
Possible in theory, but we're now stacking hypotheses. At some point, the explanation becomes less parsimonious than just, he uses a spray tan and doesn't blend around the eyes. You're adding epicycles to the model.
Occam's spray tan.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that.
You loved it. That's the face of a man who loved it.
I'm not acknowledging it. There's one dimension of this I think deserves more attention, which is the class signaling aspect. Self-tanner has a particular cultural valence in America. It's associated with a certain kind of aspiration. The idea that a tan signals leisure, wealth, outdoor living. But the specific way it's deployed matters enormously. A subtle, well-blended spray tan applied by a professional reads as expensive. It says, I winter in Saint-Anne orange streaky poorly blended one reads as, it says, I went to a strip mall tanning salon before prom.
It's the difference between a bespoke suit and an off-the-rack suit that doesn't quite fit. Both are suits. Both cost money. But one signals taste and the other signals that you have money, but not the cultural knowledge to deploy it effectively. It's the distinction between economic capital and cultural capital, to use Bourdieu's terms.
That's exactly the tension Trump has always embodied. He's a billionaire who eats well-done steak with ketchup. He lives in a gilded penthouse that reads as opulent to some and garish to others. The orange complexion is part of that same package. It's a wealth signal that has been executed in a way that signals something other than elite taste. It's nouveau riche aesthetics, and it's been remarkably consistent across decades.
Which might be the point. If your political brand is I'm rich, but I'm not one of them, having a complexion that looks like a spray tan from a suburban tanning salon rather than a subtle Saint Tropez glow might be an asset, not a liability. It's visually saying, I have the money to get a tan, but I don't have the effete cultural knowledge to get a good one, and I don't care.
It's visual populism, the tan of the people. And it creates this weird solidarity. There are probably millions of Americans who've had a bad spray tan experience and look at him and think, yeah, I've been there. It's relatable in a deeply strange way.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The vivid crimson aurora observed over Réunion Island in 1938 was initially attributed to molecular nitrogen emissions at extremely high altitudes. But spectroscopic analysis decades later revealed the dominant contributor was actually atomic oxygen at 220 kilometers. Excited by a rare low-energy electron precipitation event, the nitrogen signature had been a calibration artifact in the original photographic plates.
A calibration artifact on photographic plates. In 1938, on Réunion Island. That someone caught decades later. The patients required to go back to 70-year-old photographic plates and reanalyze the spectroscopy is staggering.
Hilbert manages to find facts that sound like they were generated by an AI trained exclusively on footnotes from obscure doctoral dissertations. Every single episode, without fail.
I don't know how he does it.
Alright, so to wrap this up, the orange hue is almost certainly cosmetic, probably DHA-based, and the real question isn't what causes it, but why it persists. And the answer to that, I think, is that it works. It's a visual signature that has become inseparable from the public figure. Changing it would be more disruptive than maintaining it. The orange has transcended being a feature of his appearance and become a feature of his identity.
That's the thing about distinctive physical characteristics in public life. They start as accidents or choices, but once they're encoded in the public imagination, they become constraints. You can't change them without undermining the recognizability, that is, for a public figure, a significant portion of their capital. It's the same reason Prince stayed Prince even after he changed his name. The visual brand was too valuable to abandon.
The question I'm left with is whether we'll see imitators, political figures who deliberately cultivate a distinctive visual quirk. Not necessarily orange skin, but something as a branding strategy learned from the Trump playbook. Will there be a senator in 20 years who's known for wearing one yellow glove, or a governor who always appears in a specific shade of purple?
I suspect we already are. The lesson has been learned: in a saturated media environment, being visually distinctive is more valuable than being visually conventional. The cost of looking unusual is lower than the cost of being forgettable. And that's a calculation that every aspiring public figure is now making, whether consciously or not.
On that slightly ominous note, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop, this has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at My Weird Prompts. We'll be back next week.
See you then.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.